Thanks very much. And our next paper is by Tommy Coombs. He manages the Bluebill Community Development Project, and his doctoral research, also in the Department of Applied Social Studies, is about stories of the lived experience of older men residing in a sheltered housing complex in Dublin. And the title of his talk today is Invisible Men, Is There a Way Back to Me and For Me? Thank you.
Okay, hi, as I said, my name is Tommy Coombs, and I work in Dublin in Bluebell. I manage Bluebell Community Development Project part-time, and I also coordinate Regeneration Project in Bluebell part-time. The last couple of months I've taken up that post. You know that saying, if you fail to prepare, prepare to fail. This morning I experienced huge powerlessness when my youngest boy, 22, took the key off the car for the house and went to work. I dropped my wife to work at 7 o'clock, and I came back and was left sitting outside the house waiting on the neighbour who just got a hip replaced to wake up to give me the spare key that's in her house. And but I had the time to sort of think about it. What was I going to draw from my thesis for this presentation today? And what I presented the thing at the World Community Conference earlier this year, a small piece of film. I'm going to show you a small piece of film. It's less than 3 minutes. It was photographed by one of our workers, and he also co-wrote the song that's attached to it. He was in a band called Swim in the 90s, and I thought it fits really well. We work in a very marginalised community in Bluebell. It's one of the most marginalised communities in the state. And in particular, we work a lot with men living on the margins of society. I'm hoping to cram a lot in, and I want you to sort of have a look at our project, as maybe on this talk today, this morning, but being a case study of how you work with marginalised men. Men are really difficult to work with. I've been working with the men now for 11 years, and relationships are massive. I would have a really good relationship with the men, and so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to stick on the bit of film first, if you don't mind, right? And I'll play that, and then I'll get into that. It's just to sort of set the scene a little bit, to see where some of the men from the study live, and other men would live in similar conditions. Okay, so I'll just I'll escape this one. I'm not really brilliant at this, but I'll escape that, and I know this other thing is down here somewhere. I think it's probably this one. Just play it, is that it? Yeah. Can we stick the lights back on? Yeah, thanks. So, 11 years ago, the men were invisible, but you can see some of them are visible now, right? And as the walk went on, they became more visible. There's 42 units, there's 62 units in Bluebell, and there's another 20-30 units occupied over the bridge in Jamestown Court. That's nearly 100 units. And men and women struggle to survive, men more than women. The study that I undertook was with men. And I interviewed six men. One of them died. One of them got sick. So the findings of the study was from four men. From an ethical perspective, the man that was sick, I couldn't keep going back to him and sort of qualify the narrative. So that was part. And unfortunately, one of the other men died. So why I'm here is to say the power of story and the power of the lived experience. And our project has worked from that perspective over the last number of years. This journey, this PhD journey started for me 4 years ago, and the learning that the project has accrued over that 4 years has been off the scale positive in relation to the results that we have with men. Slideshow from the beginning. So that's me. So into the next one. I put in a few sketches. These sketches were drawn by one of the men, who we discovered actually works with charcoal really well. And so this is a narrative inquiry study into life experiences of all the men living in sheltered housing and their involvement in community development, because the narrative inquiry process itself turned out to be the best tool that we ever used by saying to men, I'm doing a thing from Manute to, whatever you want. No, we're going to listen to your story. And would you like to tell your story? And we let, so the men bought into it, probably because I get on well with them initially. But then it was like somebody was listening to their story. Somebody understood the story. I'm an older man myself, so I would have had similar life experiences. My life crashed 18 years ago. My marriage broke down. My father died. A lot of stuff happened. I lost contact with my children. I have 7 children. And so walking my way back through that over the last 18, 19 years, I know what it's like to drink. I know what it's like to be drunk. I know what it's like to have no money. I know what it's like to have no love. I know what it's like to have no work. So when the men were telling me bits, I said, you fucking don't know what that's like, Tommy. Well, I actually do know what that's like. And it created a sense of a co-journey experience. So when we were telling each other our stories, because that's what it ended up doing, it allowed a depth of inquiry that I believe is unprecedented, and hence the knowledge that was accrued from it and the findings that came out from it. So, aims and objectives of the study, the journey was is the men. So tell us about your life. To where you are now and their experience, because we needed to understand also why are we so successful, why are the men engaging with us so readily. I'm just flying through this because I've loads of support. I want to get loads in. So I like this guy Oakley, and I know Dave knows him as well. I think is he a Nigerian man? We live stories that either give our lives meaning or negated with meaningless. If we change the stories we live by, quite possibly we change our lives. So I'm in awe of the men that I interview. I cannot understand, because of my own weaknesses, how they get up in the morning. Why would you want to get up in the morning to face shit every day? Why would you want to get up in the morning to experience pain, to experience addiction, to experience neglect, to experience loneliness, to experience, why would you want to get up? Fuck it, take me. So it's sort of understanding that and is really important. So I got this book, I can't remember the name of the book, by a guy called Vogel. I got it in New York a couple of years ago. Stories are the most powerful way we humans learn. Every community, like every person, is full of stories. Sharing certain stories deepens the community connections. If people don't know or can't learn your stories, they don't know or understand your community. They can't know who you are, what you do, or how what you do matters. And I just think that's really good. I'm going to play this. Okay, that was it. I just love Nina Simone. I think that song was quite relevant to all the stuff that was coming up there. I just say, at the weekend, while waiting on the project to open Monday, I moved my bits of furniture around to give me something to do. There's only 5 days in my week. I don't count Saturday and Sunday. It's like a fucking ghost town here. I missed out on being a father, never had kids. I used to mind a little boy for a woman friend. I would sometimes bring him to McDonald's in the square for a happy meal and show him off, pretend that he was mine. You understand, don't you? My ma and dad put me away when I was 6 years old. I was beaten most days. Those so-called holy brothers said I was stupid, even backward. I wasn't. I left that place myself when I was 16. Some of the men gave me nicknames that they had when they were kids. One guy was called Popeye. Although Popeye loved the voluntary work with the project and reveled in his newly found purposeful demeanour, his struggle with alcohol was ongoing. He was always sober Monday and Friday while volunteering with us. But outside and in between those days, he often slipped back. Popeye's voice was croaky and he half coughed as he greeted me. There was no air in his flat. The sweet smell of cheap cider was very apparent, even though the residue of a million cigarettes lingered in the air. and matted the walls and ceiling. He reached for a smoke. I suppose you heard the news, Tommy. Brutal, isn't it? Popeye started to cough as he lit up. Your man Mick across the way reckons it's these cheap cigarettes that did the damage and made me sick. But Jesus Christ, Tommy, how could you afford to buy smokes from the shops? I never intended to bring the research study up, but Popeye caught me by surprise. Probably have to put the rest of those interviews back until after the treatment, Tommy. He suggested just as I was preparing to leave. I was looking forward to sitting down with you again. He nodded as if to agree with himself. Popeye will sometimes talk about the pain of losing contact with his children because of his addiction to alcohol and the many mistakes he has made in his life. It's over 20 years now, Tommy. He paused, adding a laboured, fuck's sake. I think about my kids all the time. One day they might come looking for me. You never know. The space to grapple with and explore the social construct that determines his daily, hourly life, living experience is not available to Popeye. His social reality is about meeting his daily, hourly challenges of addiction, loneliness, poverty, disconnectedness, and apathy. It seems that Popeye is just there. He believes his presence doesn't matter and it has no impact. He just exists in order to die. Have we got much time left?
You have about 4 minutes.
All right, I'll skip one or two. Because I think it's important for people to understand the challenge. Bip was one of the first men I interviewed for this study and initially the most enthusiastic. As we travelled together through the twists and turns of Biff's life journey, I had noticed a low tolerance with himself of his own failings, particularly when talking about his marriage and his only son, Peter. I made decisions in my life, nobody fucking else. It was all down to me. I chose to leave my wife and kid. I chose to drink. I'm to blame for every fuck up that contributed to this mess. I'm only having the one, for fuck's sake. Bip, on noticing my approach, waved his hand as if to swat an annoying fly, spat the words out as he stared at a half-drank pint of Guinness sitting on the bar counter. Throughout the night, I observed Bip rise to the high that his demon promised. I left the bar, but Bip stayed behind, the centre of loud attention, while quietly the grip of his awakened master grew tighter, despite his only having one resolve. It was only his second slip in the 10 years I'd known him. What those Christian brothers did to me, my younger brother, and I'll never forget, and the fact that I couldn't stop them hurting my little brother never leaves me, makes me so fucking angry. Bip is back volunteering in this project, in our project. He continues to struggle, but he's slowly finding his way back. The struggle of the men, the nature of the research inquiry, what happened was the men found a channel. They found a place where they had a voice in the room, in their room or wherever we met. And the depth of the outpourings was sometimes really difficult for me to handle. We had to put in, we had counseling available both for the participants of the study, but also for myself. It was hard to carry that home. Sometimes I felt guilty. I felt guilty going home. I was going home. I remember going home in November and it was freezing cold and his flat was freezing cold. And I was going home to a fire and my family. He was being left there in a smelly, damp, fucking lonely environment, alone. And that's hard to do, particularly when you create, when you build the relationships. I'm just flying through this relational experience, I said that already. And the co-journeying, like the narrative inquiry experience for me, created this, and I think I wrote it there somewhere, it's a forever bond with the men. Like, because I know things about them that nobody else knows, and they know things about me that nobody else knows. The findings reflect the struggle participants face in dealing with perceived invisibility and loss of identity, disconnection, unemployment, struggle for redemption, love and loss, all that are up there, socioeconomic position, onset of old age, and the subsequent loss of the masculinity script. Because when you're growing up as men, you're given a script, there you go. Be a man, whatever that means, be a man. Provide, don't cry, be strong. But when you get old or you get sick, what the fuck happens then, you know? What do you do then? So participants displayed a strong sense of longing to belong. They needed something to latch onto. They needed something to get out of bed in the morning while dealing with their own personalized blame and regret for their perceived failure as men. Engaging the research process itself, and I said already, the research process itself was a fantastic community development in action. But it was not all bad news. The good news is, over the last number of years, we started off by going on trips. We went over to Electrofrack in Connemara to an industrial school. Shocking. Two of the men wanted to go there. We initially were fishing and we were in the Japanese gardens. This year, we went to the European Parliament in Brussels. Last year, we went to Auschwitz and Birkenau in Poland. The year before that, by mistake, we went to Valencia in Spain. We were supposed to go to Valencia in Kerry. Someone said, I know a bloke that has a bar in Kerry, in Valencia. And I said, oh, no. And we ended up in Valencia in Spain. So this narrative quite probably will hopefully contribute to the outing of preconceived notions that relegates all the men to be viewed through an agent dependency and non-contributing prism, and instead enable the development of a counter-narrative based on a more informed human perspective. And just looking at this here, there's Niall, he's the artist guy. Louis was in depression and he's still on medication, but he's out and he's up. Sean, and just to say that I didn't interview any of these men, so I'm not exposing anybody. Sean was the first man. Two men came, Sean and a fellow called John Kennedy, 11 years ago, came to the project and asked for help. He became the chair of the Blue Belt Community Development Project. He became my boss. So when you're looking at the results and the outcomes, they're really positive stuff there. Like, this guy is from Jamestown Court. He only appeared last year. Like, he appeared when we were going on the trip with a big black boy. So he wouldn't tell us what happened. So he bought a hat and a pair of sunglasses. All these men have huge stories. But just quickly, there's some of the pictures of the men out and about. And that was in the square in Brussels. And it's an incredible privilege for me as a worker when you get the results. This man, I'm going to finish now, sorry. This man will tell you himself, so I'm not divulging any secrets, I'm a raving alcoholic at times, right? So he's alcohol free for the last 4 months, right? But this man got cancer in his tongue and his lower jaw a couple of years ago. And his family, there's huge stories of him, I'll be here all night. But he's no contact with his family. So he had a choice. You get your tongue removed and get part of your jaw taken away and replaced with bone off your hip, or you go into 6 to 8 weeks intensive chemo and radiation. So he said, well, I'm a fucking, you're not taking me tongue. Right, so we went to St. Luke's. We took him every morning and every afternoon for, I think it was 8 weeks, I'm not sure. And the cancer went. He's now supporting a man, another older man who has stomach cancer in St. Luke's. Every day he's supporting this man, right? And he's sober while he's doing it. And this is the man that will turn up to the project Mondays and Fridays sober. This is the man that joined one of the established members of the Residence Association, which we established. And they objected to him because he was always drunk at the meetings. So we changed the meetings to 8 o'clock in the morning while he was sober. And he objected to that and he said, no, okay, whatever time the meetings are, I'll be sober. And he was. But anyway, that's it. All right. Thank you.